So this morning we're going to talk out of James, and we're going to go into James 1, and I'll get there in a minute where we're going to go. James is one of those books in the Bible that's hard. Like, if you've read the beginning of the Gospels, like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, John is like the soft disciple. He's got very soft views. He's very, like, you could read John in your most, like, your terrible day, you read John, and you feel good. Like, you're still forgiven. John 3:16, for God so loved me, right? This is kind of the story. You'll figure it out the more you read in the Bible that different disciples had different strengths and different views and different details. That's why if you've ever read the Gospels, they don't all start out in the same spot. And you may sit there wondering, like, how come not all the Gospels cover this part of the story, or they don't all say this? That's because some of the disciples noticed it different. You ever been in a room with people, even your own family, and you all remember the same situation differently? You're like, wait, did that actually happen? I don't remember that, but I did see, right? It's because you're all looking at different things. John was softer. Out of all the disciples, he was softer, and that mattered because Jesus loved him. He was a level one disciple, closest to Jesus. If you remember, he told John, basically, take care of my mom. I'm paraphrasing the way he said it, but that's the level that John was. John was, take care of my mom. This is your son. This is your mom. Take care of my family. I'm going to trust you with the most personal thing here with me on the planet as I take off here, John. You're the closest. And if you remember, there was three level disciples that were close to Jesus that he took up onto the mountain that he took with him as he went. There was a level three, or a close to Jesus disciple. And then there was a level 12. And even out of the 12, I still love the fact that Judas was one of the 12. And I see posts on this all the time on Facebook and different ministries that say it, and posts that are people find little things, but it's still true. Just because it's on Facebook doesn't make it alive, and half the stuff maybe. Some of the stuff I love and I chuckle at when I see people post it. I don't have time myself to search it, so if I don't have people that post those things, I'll never see them. But sometimes I see them, and some of the posts are like Judas had the best teacher, the best preacher, the best leader, the best pastor, the best that you could have. He had Jesus there. And he was still rotten down in his core, because it doesn't matter your church and your leader and your authority. It matters in you. Are you going to change your attitude? One of the people I was talking to this morning is from the north, from the church up there, and he was there when I got turned around. And in his mind, he digs on himself and he pushes himself down. And I'm just trying to encourage him in a response, saying, hey, God sees great things in you. Do you remember? Do you remember? God put great things inside of you. You know, Miguel, if you remember, there was a night we were in Kirkland, and we went out to the church there, and we prayed. And when we were praying in the church in Kirkland, God showed up, and it was like a cloud filled the room. And I was just sitting in the back of the room, and I was praying, and I told Miguel, I said, you see how you can't see the stuff over there, and you can see some of the lights, you see the cloud and the presence in here, you feel that, where you don't even, like, we're sitting on the ground, like, you can't get yourself up, you're just down here, this is the presence of God. And I was talking with Miguel about it, and he was looking at the stuff, seeing it, and he still will talk about it. He'll still say, well, this is a powerful night, but what you don't think about is it's the same act of when the Holy Ghost sat over the planet of Earth with things that were empty, and God tries to fill us in moments when we're empty, and he puts seed inside of us, and that seed he's going to call out of you at a time down the road. You may not realize what he's going to do with it, in other words. This morning, there's seed going into you. And you may think it's just a message, it's just a teaching. And you may remember parts of it, and that's awesome. But what you don't realize is that seed goes in to grow, and later on in your life, it will show up, and you will need it when it shows up. And it could show up little pieces today, you go and use some of it, or it could show up in 10 years, and you go, I remember, Pastor talked about, that's why this, and you're going to have the right words to share. And you won't realize that's why. You know, I've talked about, I don't want you to sit there without a clue on how to respond to somebody that has a biblical question. That's because I want you equipped. I want you strong. I want you like soldiers. I want you ready for battle. I want you able. And that's one of my goals, is to help to establish God inside of your life where you're strong and you can actually have a reply for people that come to try and wage a war on you. That's a goal I have, is to teach you that way. But the very first lesson in that is being humble. I remember telling a guy who came to me, and he had his Bible. He had a big, fat, like a big, and I mean fat leather, like brown leather, looked like it was from the Bible Times type Bible in his hands, this big old thing. And he was telling all these kids this stuff, stirring up strife in a youth group get together that we had up in Midland. And we had all of Doc's teens there, and we had all of my teens from the teen group that I had back then there, and they were all, it was a bunch of kids. This wasn't like, you know, 50, 60 kids. It was a bunch of kids, and people were so upset by what was going on. I was up in my room relaxing, and when I came down the elevator just to see everybody, because it was after our get-together, they said, you got to come, this guy's, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, like, what are you guys can't handle? I literally said to some of the leaders I had there, you can't handle one guy causing a disruption? Like, how hard is this? You haven't seen me deal with disruption before? Like, it's not hard. And they, you know, literally I had a crew meet me at the elevator and walk me over to this guy. And here he is with his thing. And he's telling people things. And you could hear they sounded close to the truth with these total unbelief, total not biblical, total not true things coming out of his mouth. So it sounded, and this was the problem, is he would say to people, I served, you know, with lepers, and I went out to reach lepers and preach to them the gospel, and you don't know what you're talking about. And he was stirring up strife, and he was saying all these things that sound strong over here. And when I came up to him, he said, oh, so you're the leader. And he said, what he said to me was, you proved to me that there's a God. Remember, he's holding a big Bible. He's standing there acting like somebody who's telling other people about there's a God. And he's asking me, prove to me there's a God. And I remember telling him, I am the proof that there's a God. You're looking at the proof. This is all the proof you're getting. My Bible tells me that's all the proof you're getting. I believe that there's a God. The people, that's why I share my testimony the way I do, because people play around in the world like it's actually something to gain in it, and the only thing you're going to gain in the world is a big empty pool of nothing inside your soul that can't be filled. A dark hole that you feel alone in a world busy with people, surrounded by people, and you'll feel alone. That's what the world will offer you. Tricks, flashing lights, great sounding, you know, appeal, but this emptiness. You ever been there? Have you ever felt lonely, even though you know there's people around you in your life, and you know there's probably thousands around you in your neighborhood, but you still feel lonely? That's the world creeping on you.
Come on.
That's literally, right? Literally, you got a city, thousands and thousands and thousands of people around you at any moment, and I mean right around you, yet you're all by yourself. You could be, I've been to places like that, like Lance was saying, it's like Las Vegas. I've been to places where you can see in eyesight around you thousands of people sitting there, and yet you are all alone. It's worse than this, though, guys. This is what the world's trick is. Have you ever been there in your own house with your own family and still felt alone? Well, that's not possible. It sure is. That's the world's trick. That's what it does. It leads you down roads that you've been before and tries to convince you you've never been here. Have you ever had something that you used to do? Like, I was a drug addict. You know, I was an alcoholic. You know, I was abusive. You know, you don't think that there's ever a time when I'm talking to somebody and I'm just like, I just want to punch you in the forehead. You don't think that could ever happen. I was in fights all the time. You don't think that like, brushes up. I have to soften it, adjust it, and then I just punch them in the shoulder. And then they're like, ah, pastor. And I'm just like, you missed one. Like, you're lucky. You missed one. It was coming for your face at full speed, and I adjusted everything, and it just tapped you in the shoulder. No, it happens because your flesh, like I said before, will rise up, and it will try to get you. It will try to trick you. You don't think that the thought will go through your head and you smell somebody out there. You know, I did drugs, not Alex-level drugs. Alex did drugs where his body's DNA should have been shifted. He did so many drugs that he looks like he's sitting there, but really he's drooling out on a bed mat somewhere out in the middle of the wilderness, maybe in a van down by the river, half dead. That's what the version of him without God actually is doing right now. He shouldn't even be coherent. The fact that he can see us still is a testament that God can heal somebody's body, because the amount of drugs that guy did, I did drugs and sold drugs to people like that, but I didn't do those drugs. The kind of drugs where people, like, if you've ever seen like a crackhead come up to you, you don't look at a crackhead and go, I wish I could be more like you. You look at a crackhead and you're like, oh no, is this is the road I'm? Like, half your teeth are missing. Your fingers look like bones. Like,
Not good.
Yeah, why do you keep doing this? Like, it's not a nervous twitch. I want to get in my life, like, I didn't do those kind of drugs on purpose. Because anytime you see somebody that's on a drug and you're like, I don't ever want to look like that guy, I avoided all those ones. But there's drugs I did that you can smell when people are doing them, or you can tell when people are doing them. And when you smell it, still to this day, I did so much of it, when I smell it, it's just like an aroma that you used to like. So I can still smell it and I go, I liked that aroma. You don't think that the flesh in me goes, you want some of that? And then my spirit, right away, I'm not saying I go out smoking. I'm telling you the truth. You think that somehow you get saved and your flesh dies? Are you nuts?
Come on.
I'm saying in the moment, like if I still smell it, somebody over there, there's like a million names for it, so I'm not going to use it, but somebody over there is smoking something and I'll go, oh, I liked the way that was. Part of my flesh jumps and goes, wouldn't you want to have some of that again? And then my spirit goes, don't you remember the dead feeling that you had when you were down that road? The empty, failure, go nowhere feeling that brought you. The hole in your soul that can't be filled up that brought you. You don't remember that. Has anybody's life ever gotten better from drinking an alcoholic beverage? I used to drink them all the time. All the time. I would drink them hard alcohol before I'd go to parties where I would drink hard alcohol. I used to tease people that drank beer, even though I would drink beer, but I would tease them like, grow up. Like what, you're going to play at this game or you're going to get drunk? Like, I don't drink beer to drink beer. I drink beer when I have nothing else to drink and I just wanted something. I'm going to drink this. That's the kind of mess. You don't still think that my flesh would jump at the thought and sight of it and go, don't you want some of that again? It's not a big deal. It's not, the Bible doesn't, I mean, it says about alcohol, but Jesus had... And we don't want to study. Nobody wants to study it. Nobody wants to find out what the difference in wine to wine is. Nobody even wants to admit that there's a fermented and non-fermented wine. No, we don't want to admit that, because then we'd have to get real about alcohol and what it does. You ever seen a strong leader that's drunk just leading super strong? Like, man, you have all the answers in somebody that's drunk? No. Somebody that's drunk has all the floor on their teeth. Like, what did you do? I'm trying to pull carpet out of my teeth. What did you do? Well, I wet myself while laying in the carpet. Like,
yeah, come on.
Ooh, that's, man, you are just super special today. No, it leaves a mark and a hole in you that you do not want left in you. It leaves a nasty sign in you do not want in you. It leaves that road that you already know what's down there. And this is how I war when that stuff comes at me. A temptation comes at me for something that I shouldn't have, something from my past. And as soon as I'm drawn to that something I shouldn't have, my spirit jumps and says, don't you remember what it feels like when you go down that road and you realize, I've been here. I've felt this. I've seen this before, and it doesn't end well for me. I'm alone in this road, even though I have much company. I don't feel full. I feel hollow. This is what the world does. Have you ever had people abandon you, leave you, forsake you? Yeah, newsflash, it will happen to you in your life over and over and over by people, because people will fail you. I've preached this now for... the past months I've spoken points of this. It will happen. People will fail you. So how do I go on? You have to find something outside of people to trust in if you're going to go on with your heart intact. Because if you keep just putting your trust in people, what did I just say they're going to do? Fail you. You're going to have to learn how to trust in God if you want to be able to move on repaired with a whole heart. I'm telling you the truth, because I have been there myself. I have been betrayed. You know, you maybe have heard stories where I was a womanizer and I chased women and I dated, you know, a lot of women over a period of years. I'm not proud of it. It's not a proud point like, oh yeah, I was a huge womanizer. Oh, that's something to be proud of. A Trump is still living down his womanizing. You think it's something to be proud of? It's not. But I was chasing something, and the thing that set me off into all that mess, you know what it was? It was a girl I trusted who cheated on and betrayed me, and it hurt my heart when I was young, and it sent me on a path where I cheated on and betrayed and hurt other people. Why? Because I wasn't saved. I wasn't chasing God. I didn't know where to put my trust. I lost trust. Have you ever lost trust in somebody? You know what it's like? There's a saying that people have when they don't want you to ever get trust back. You betrayed my trust. I don't know how I'll trust you again. That's just a way for them to say, I don't want to trust you. And I want you to know I don't want to trust you. And good luck. Because there is nothing you can do. It's like trying to fix the you've always and you've never. You've heard me say this. You can't fix I've never and I've always. You ever try to do that? You know, DJ, if your mom says to you, you've always done this. Let's say, for instance, let's take you back a bunch of years and you're in your teens and you're always in your room and you never come down to the hang out with us and you never come to the table and you never. Now, let's just say you hear her and you go, well, Mom, I'm not trying to be anti-family, right? So I'm going to show up. Now, all of a sudden, you purposely show up downstairs and you're hanging out with them, right? Do you think that she's going to notice and all of a sudden she's going to be like, thank you? No, because the moment you end up in your room, what is it? You always do this.
Come on.
You can't. Did you hear what I'm saying?
Come on.
The moment, and you can go to your room, but the problem is now you're going to look at your room like I can't even go in there for 5 minutes before I'm always in my room. You can't beat always, and you can't beat never. So as long as somebody wants to put that on you, you can't overcome it. I'm not gonna preach a lie to you this morning. If always and never, you always and you never, try going. Can any of you travel back in time? Because if you can, raise your hand if you can, because I'd love to make a lot of money on what we're going to figure out going back in time. Oh, you can't. That's right. So when you've always and never something, you can't go back there and fix it. You can fix what you do going forward, but you can't go fix that.
Come on.
You can't. One of the things that bothers me, I'd love to get into my preaching this morning, but I'm just on this apparently. One of the things that bothers me is unforgiveness. You know, more Christians suffer from unforgiveness than you would believe, and I don't know a more antichrist spirit than unforgiveness, because Jesus came to set you free and forgive you. I don't know a more unchristian, ungodly, an antichrist spirit than unforgiveness, yet we do not like function. You mentioned forgiveness to a Christian, and we do not want to let it go.
Come on.
We're like a ravenous dog that hasn't eaten in months with a fresh raw meat steak in front of us.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't even, if I haven't eaten for a month and I see a steak, it doesn't have to be cooked. I'll just warm it in the sun. Like, imagine a dog. You know what I mean? Less restraint than that even. And that's the way we act. So what am I saying? I'm saying if you actually want to learn how to overcome those things, you want to learn how to beat the alcohol addiction. Like I said, you ever seen alcohol fix somebody's life? You see on the news like 3 people were driving drunk the other day and saved orphans. You know, my husband came home just stinking drunk the other night and fixed the wall finally, cleaned up the house, organized the laundry. No. Alcohol doesn't fix somebody's life. You know, that guy started smoking weed and just did amazing things with his life. Started that Fortune 500 company. Yeah, in his dream as he sat there next to the wall. Like, he had some amazing plans for next week, but for like 10 years. You ever met somebody on those drugs?
Come on.
Like, oh man, oh, we're doing something today. Yeah, the same thing you did 5 days ago and 10 days ago and 100 days ago, nothing.
Come on.
You have great plans today. What are you going to do? As little as possible. I see these people. I notice them. You spot them. They're all over the place. You can smell half of them and you can see the other ones, and they all sit there and they have that look in their eye. And I don't just mean the red look or the yellow look. I mean, they have the other look, that look of like dead inside, hollow,
yeah,
empty, lonely.
That's right.
I'm telling you, it's plaguing the body of Christ. It's plaguing the world itself. People are out there. It's disturbing to me because we act so alone, yet we're so surrounded.
Yeah.
We act so alone, so empty. And I'm telling you, it's because we chase the wrong thing. It's because we let our flesh rule. It's because we let our flesh speak. It's because we obey it. Or because you think those thoughts and you get condemned because you're thinking them. You ever done something where you're like, well, that was the flesh.
Yeah.
That was terrible. How about you ever done something where you just thought you ruined everything? It's all over. I have. Maybe you weren't bad enough to do those kind of things. I did. You know, it's all over. I ruined everything. You know, I've been to where I should have went to jail. I mean, more times than I was ever caught, but I've been to where I should have went to jail. And when you're going to go to jail, you just go, well, now I won't be able to get jobs. Now I won't be able to go, you know, they're going to be mad at me for blowing that guy's house up. I just know it. I wish I was joking, but the point I'm getting at is you're going to have moments in your life when you're going to feel like you failed. And the truth is, you probably have. But if you're your only success, if you're your only hope, then we are all in trouble. Yeah. We need a bigger hope.
That's
we need
right.
something that we can trust
yes.
in. We need an answer that we can have established in our lives that we don't have to doubt. We need a God functioning. Guys, if you don't have that, you are empty whether you know it or not. And if it may just be a matter of time before you catch on, but you're empty somewhere inside.
Yes.
You're hollow. You're lonely. You need Jesus in your life.
Yes.
You see, I actually met him. I don't just talk about him. I'm not trying to convince a bunch of people, hey, why don't you believe in something that's a fantasy?
Come on, that's right.
What point do I have to do that? What kind of person would I be to try and encourage people to believe in something that doesn't exist?
Come on.
I've met Jesus.
Yes.
I know Jesus. I have a relationship with Jesus, and it has changed my life. And it has allowed me to actually take hold of some promises. You know, Rhonda, we had talked a little bit ago, and it was like a quick conversation, but I told you, I said, and this was after a talk that we had had, but I said, I don't pick up other people's burdens. And you said, I want to be more like that. Well, so did I. That's why I picked up Jesus's burden, which is easy and light. His yoke is not tying me down to things that I feel bound to, that I can't control.
Yes.
Right? I mean, if you've ever been there, you've ever had thoughts you wish you could get rid of, Ernesto? Things that you wish you had never done? I mean, I've heard some of the stories. I'm not going to put you under the bus, but there's certain things in your life that you've done that you wish you hadn't done, and they come back to you, and they might haunt you. Mm-hmm. They might try to get you. We've had some of those talks. You know, anybody here who's mistreated another human being probably has some of them.
Yeah.
Ernesto just did that more than a lot of people. I laugh because I don't think he's done it more than I have, but he's done it more than a lot of people have just because he was abusive.
Mm.
He's hurt people's lives. You know, and guess what? You may wish that you could undo it. I guarantee you, the closer he gets to God, the more conviction hits him, and the more he wishes he could undo those things. You're not proud of those things you did, like, oh, I wish I had burned the other eye on that guy with a cigarette. No, you're not proud of those things. You wish you hadn't done the first part of it. However, if God is the God that forgives you, and God's the one that's working inside of you, and God's the one that's actually the future and the hope, and God's the one who's setting a standard for your tomorrows, then the old stuff can actually pass away if you're connecting to God. Do you hear what I'm saying? It's in the day when you stop connecting, the day that you want to live fleshly, you'll lose hope. Why do we do this to ourselves? Do you hear what I said? We're doing it. Right? DJ, I know in the natural there's certain things that you have to fight. I don't have to know the details of them, but I know some of them just because of things that I know. In the natural, I mean. But in the spiritual, I also know that you have to face other things that you're not telling other people that are going on inside of only your head.
Yeah.
You're not telling other people it. It's going inside of you. So what do we do? This is what guys do. I can't speak to what women do. If you haven't been able to tell yet, I'm a guy. I can tell you a lot about the guy's side of things. None of the experience of the women. Thank God I'm married. She can be very vocal about that side for me. The guy's side, what we do, and this will happen more often than not, you probably shut up a lot of times and you just go, all right, and you're going to take it on the chin. Because that's how we're trained as men, from little boys all the way up is, I'm going to deal with it. So we'll take the burden, put it right there with all the other burdens that we got on our back, and we're just going to carry it on. Just going to do this. We muscle through it. We take the burden on our shoulders, and we're just going to do it. It's arrogance and pride, but we do it. Men do it. You ever heard the idea that a man won't ask for directions? Yeah, it's the same thing. We don't even ask for help. When's the last time you're carrying something that you're like, this is borderline too heavy for me? Could you help me? No. Guys will fall to the ground half the time before we're going to ask for help. Passed out. I've watched guys do this. Not literally pass out from it. I've watched them fall down because they'll carry that burden. That's when I normally get the counsel phone calls when they've dropped all their stuff on the ground in their life and everything's broken down here and they're like, I did the best I could.
Yeah,
by yourself. That's one of the first things I tell guys. Stop it. Stop being by yourself. That's not how we wage war.
Yeah, that's right.
I once had a car full of guys chasing me down. And I was running away from them because guess what? A car full of guys will beat you up. One guy, you have a chance. I always consider it at least a 50-50, depending on what I'm carrying with me. Sometimes it's a whole lot more in my favor, depending on what I'm carrying with me. But one-on-one is one thing. Four-on-one, I don't care what movie you guys saw. If four guys get out of a car and you go like this, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. You're getting beat up. You're going to wake up later pulling asphalt out of your chest, being like, what happened? Well, they stomped on you. That's what happened. It was four guys. You punched that guy and three guys punched your face. Like, what did you think was going to happen? You know, you hear the story where I, you know, kind of took out several guys. That wasn't because that was because they were staggered over a good distance and I was able to take them out one at a time. And then after just the first couple guys, the other ones got afraid. And then how hard is it to take out somebody from the back? If you can't do that, you shouldn't be fighting. I had guys chasing me down and I was running. I didn't know where to go. If you've ever had somebody chase you in a car and you think like, well, just get away from them. Oh, where? I was in the world. I had things on me you wouldn't go to a police station with. Like, hey, those guys are chasing me and don't search my car or smell me or my pockets. They're chasing me down. What do? Just lose them without getting the police's attention. I'm trying to escape them. I'm driving around. I remember going down to this park that we had in the area, and this was about 45 minutes from where I lived, and I was flying down streets the best I could, trying to get away from these people. They're chasing me, very obviously chasing me, people yelling out the windows, pulling around my car. They didn't hit my car, but they were, wherever I stopped, they were going to get me. I could go home, they'd get me. Wherever I stopped, when I stopped my car, they're going to get me. And I pulled into this park, and when I got into the park, there was some signs for a celebration of some friends that were some gypsy friends of mine that were in the park. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're having a celebration in the park. These people I know. So I flew through the, if you've ever been to a park district park, it wasn't like a go down the street with a slide park. It was a big park district park where they had like all kinds of different park areas. And I'm flying through there looking for their little celebration. And I pull up to their celebration, and my car, if you ever hit your car brakes hard enough where the car skidded, you hear that, like that means you stopped too quick. If some of you don't know that, I don't want to drive with you driving. That's a you stopped too quick moment. I did that. People came up to the car, you know, walking from the little gazebo they're at. What's going on? I'm not sitting in my car like rolling down the window like, hey, I'm running out of the car like there's guys right on my tail. Well, these guys grabbed bats and all kinds of stuff out of their car. And when the four guys, I mean, like right away, like these were some people that had things on them already and some people that went to their car. But anyway, there was more than four of them at this reunion-y get-together they had. It was a bunch. And some of them were close to me. And so they immediately pulled things out. They didn't, like, keep the knife in here in case somebody sees. It was like, no, anything you had was out in the air like this. Like, we want you to see you're in trouble when you guys pulled up. Well, they weren't very far behind me. When that car pulled up, they just kept on going. Because all of a sudden, I wasn't alone. All of a sudden, I had this backup they didn't think would be there. All of a sudden, it was like, whoa, if we get out now, us four guys, what is there, 50 people out here? We're going to get our faces stomped into the concrete. No thanks. Your head doesn't go, I'm going to take that guy down, though. Your head goes, I'll get beat to snot, and who knows what happens with me. Like, I'm out of here. Right? I've watched kids avoid getting punishment like ninjas in the Matrix. Have you ever caught a kid with something? You're like, you're not supposed to have that. You're going to find out what fantasy and story is all about as they start to weave this tapestry of information that's false. She gave me the cookie. It was in my hand. It fell in my pocket. I forgot it was there. I just pulled it out. I didn't even realize you'd made a new batch. I walked past the counter. It fell into my mouth and got all over. I didn't eat a cookie, I touched it and put it down and I wiped it, and that's how. Just catch a kid in something and you watch somebody dodge responsibility. There was 12 of us kids in my family. You know what happened when my parents caught us? He did it 12 times. Like, God help whoever was youngest, because they'd be like, I don't mind going to do, but. Like, nope, definitely it was her. She did it. Like, really? She drove the car out last night. You don't think about how sensical it is. You just try to avoid punishment. You try to avoid, right? at all extent. So this, these people tried to avoid, I'm just telling you, this is what's natural, is to avoid punishment. That's what we do. We dodge it. We lie. We trick. We just, well, it's a little white lie. I'm just going to tell a full blatant lie, but I'm going to call it a little white lie so I can sell it to myself, so I don't mind selling it to you. Here's this small little white lie that's an obvious full lie because there's no such thing as a little lie. Well, these guys, when they saw these other people there, they thought, I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to avoid punishment. Why am I saying that? Because the devil will avoid you if you are not by yourself. He will try to avoid that battle when he realizes you're going to stomp my face in. He's going to get his hands off you the moment he realizes, well, you're not alone. I thought you were alone. I was real big on myself a moment ago when you were alone. But you're not alone. You see, when you feel alone and there's a bunch of people around you, there's something wrong inside of you, and there's something that the devil has got working in you, and there's something that you've let your flesh trick you into, and you're sitting there lonely. You ever met a lonely person who is full of excitement and energy to go do something great that day? No, not ever. Lonely people want to lay there so much that they actually lay there on their way to lay somewhere else. I've watched lonely people lay on the floor as they roll down towards someplace where they're going to go lay down. I've watched lonely people roll off of the couch to the TV, crawl over, hit a button, and lay there wherever they were to watch the rest of the show. That's how depressed the lonely person was. Have you ever felt depressed where you didn't feel like moving? You just didn't feel it. What do you still, you know, Rhonda, you go, you know, hey, what are you doing in bed still? And he goes, oh, is it, I'm still in bed? What time is it? It's 5 o'clock. You were in bed 2 days ago. I'd never seen you. What do you do? I don't even notice what's happening. Why? I'm empty inside. Yeah. I'm lonely inside. Yeah. You ever felt that way? As well, yeah. Don't throw him under the bus, whichever one of them it is. Yeah. It was the other one. Yeah. He's not even here right now, but it was that guy. It's okay. He's still out of town. You guys can. He can be under the bus all the time. Just you can throw him under the bus for everything. But when you're that way, when you're alone, that's how it feels. And when you're dealing with somebody that's alone, that's how it feels. But I'm expressing to you, this is what happens. You lose your energy. You lose your energy. When you're going to do something together with someone, you have an energy to do it that you don't have when you're alone. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Come on.
You don't feel confident when you're alone. You don't feel strong when you're alone. You don't feel full of energy when you're alone. You don't feel excited when you're alone. You feel empty. You feel hollow. You feel alone. And alone is depressing. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, Pastor, you're not even preaching to anybody this morning. It may look like it, but I'm preaching to all of you. You're going to feel this way in your life. Why? Well, I hate to tell you this, but the Bible warns you. Because men, and that doesn't mean just the gender men. If you're a woman and you're like, I knew it was men. They're the problem to everything. Like, the Bible even tells you difficult times are going to come because of men. Men are going to be lovers of themselves. I keep telling people this about men, and nobody wants to believe me, but it's them. Mankind, ladies, mankind. Mankind is going to love themselves so much so, love their own ways, love their own wants, love their own will, that they're going to cause difficult times to come on the planet. That's going to happen. It's happening, guys. It's happening. This isn't a new thing. This has been happening. Okay? What does that mean? Well, it's a little path. I'm trying to give you guys a path. I'm trying to help you guys understand there's a point that you've come from, and it's over here. And there is a way out to where you're going, and it's over there. In this path, on this path, there's a cool protection on this path, this narrow way. You heard me mention before about Judas, how he had Jesus teaching him. Jesus Christ was teaching him. He was still a huge mistake and a mess that made all kinds of problems for the ministry and for people. Didn't he? With the best teacher. Why? Because the way to heaven is narrow.
Yeah.
Okay? It's narrow. It's a thin way. If this is a forest and a wilderness, you know, when we were up in the north, we had 22 acres of mostly trees. And we had paths throughout the 22 acres where we would take four-wheelers to go do work. Or that's what I would tell my wife. And really, we would take them out there and jump them and ride them as fast as we could through the forest. If you've never been through a forest on a four-wheeler going so fast that the trees look like one color, you've really missed out on some things in life. But I have many times. We have a couple hundred acres up in the north, and you can go out there for hours and never see the same tree twice. And then there's these mud areas, and if you've never been through mud on a four-wheeler, I also will tell you you missed out. Now, the cleaning afterwards, but anyway, if you've never been through a mud puddle on a four-wheeler and just said, whatever, I don't care what I'm wearing, then you've missed out on being a to me, like a guy. Guys got to be, again, I can't speak for the women. Maybe women feel this too. But guys got to, at some point in your life, just be covered with so much mud that you feel almost proud that you're covered with so much mud. You're almost ashamed if you find an area that isn't covered. You're just like, I didn't go. I went hard into the mud today, but not hard enough. I found 3 areas under my watch that weren't muddy. And I'm going to get better tomorrow. That's the way sometimes I feel as a guy. I'm just telling you, this is the way it is for me. But we were up there in the north, and we'd have all that property, and we'd go out there, and we'd be down these places out in the middle of nowhere. And it was a very narrow path for the four-wheelers we'd be running through there. I'll just put it that way. And there's trees, and there's trees. So what happens if you go off the path just for a second on your four-wheeler? Yeah. You find out, like, hey, there was a tree there that wanted to talk with me, and I was just going to pass it by. I decided to stop and then find 5 of his friends as I went off into the trees. My dad did this once in the north. He took a four-wheeler around a corner, and then he decided, I'm going to go straight. And we all were behind him a ways because he was flying. He picked the fastest one. It's the same thing I would do with my kids. I would pick the fastest four-wheeler and be like, you guys can have these ones. Good luck. You know, try and catch dad. Well, we tried, and we went right past him because he disappeared into the forest just swallowed him up. There was no signs of him being there. He hit the corner, and it was up in the air. He hit a tree. The tree went over, and he went up the tree like a ramp. Like, that's what we found out happened later on. He went up the tree like a ramp, which doesn't end well for you on a four-wheeler. There was nobody. This wasn't the X Games. People weren't taking pictures. He just by himself, middle of nowhere. No. Now, for a second, I still think to most men, we'd be like, this is awesome, but also terrible, but this is a little awesome. Like, yeah, exactly. I bet the landing's not going to be as cool as this takeoff. But anyway, I've been there before. But what happened was we all went flying past him because we're flying. You don't stop to notice the flowers and be like, were those 3 out of whack? Like, you don't know. You're flying. We hit the corner. We all took the corner. We didn't realize there was a straight road ahead that you could take an exit. We were all like, you know, popping that corner, kicking the back out, and taking off. Well, we went for a ways looking for him, and we're like, man, he went forever. Like, dad just took off into the trees. Like, he is a wilderness man. He's out here. We've been out here like a good 40 minutes, and we can't find nothing. I don't even see a sign of his tracks out here. Like, he took off. We finally turned around and quit and gave up. And when we got back, he was sitting at the van, like, out of it. Like, we're just like, man, he looks like somebody shredded him. And also, how'd you get past us? And then he told us the story of how he heroically climbed his way back up to the, flipped his four-wheeler, you know, and rode it back into town like a, that's how any guy would tell that story. It doesn't matter. We never tell the story of drool and pain and, like, you know, I felt like that's what happened, but what really happened is I just rolled onto the four-wheeler and it drove me back into camp. Anyway, what I'm saying is that narrow way, if you miss it by even just a teeny bit, it will smack you in the face and let you know there's trees there.
Yeah, come on.
And you will then blame the way. I was in the way. I was at church. Wasn't I doing everything good? The way smacked me in the face. No, the tree smacked you in the face because you got off the way. I want to teach you how to have a relationship with Jesus, because if you don't have a real relationship with Jesus and all you know is Christianese and you can hold an awesome form of Christian, but you don't have power inside of your life, you're still empty and hollow. And I can tell who you are because you'll be lonely when I'm not lonely ever, not never.
Come on.
When my wife leaves, I hate it. When my wife leaves me and goes on a trip, and she'll go on a business trip or she'll go on a, when she goes, I don't like it. I want her there. I married her for a reason. I thought it meant you stay here with me all the time. Never leave here. This is proximity alert. If you leave it, my job is to protect you. So if you go too far, I can't do that well. Stay. Stay here. You're right here with me. Always. Forever. This is what the band means. To me, they should have just connected the rings and been like, now you have to stay right here. Like that in my head. I don't like it when she goes. Everything's worse when she's gone. Doesn't matter what the thing is. I even find out that you have to cook all the meals for food in the house, not even just a couple. You have to cook everything. Like, chicken doesn't come out and make itself. Steak doesn't come out and make itself. No vegetable makes itself. And if you microwave it, it does not taste the same. I don't care who you are. Tell me if you put enough butter on it, it tastes the same. It doesn't taste the same. What I'm saying to you is, every time she goes, I feel that way, but I never feel alone.
Yeah.
I miss her. I'm built to have her there, but I don't feel alone. If my family goes, I don't feel alone. If I'm out there where it looks like I'm alone, I'm not alone. That's why when I get around people, I'm not intimidated or afraid around other people or strangers, because I'm still not alone. Where I go, the presence of God goes, and I'm not alone. So I am like a pillar on the planet where a divine appointment from God moves where I go, because I know I'm walking in the safety of the narrow way of God, which means I am safe. So if I won't stray out into my own garbage and my own filth and my own wants and my own ideas, if I don't serve myself a big platter of what I want to do today, and I actually listen to what God may want me to do today, then I'll stay in the path, that narrow path, and I'm safe in the path, but I'm also never alone. Because the Bible says he never leaves or forsakes us. So when we start feeling alone, we have ourselves forsaken him and left him somewhere. We forget, oh, he's there. You ever made a mistake and just felt like, well, I may as well just quit? Yeah. Yes, you have. You don't have to raise your hands. We would all be doing it except the liars. The liars would keep their hands down. Like, well, I rarely ever do that, ever. Like, no, you big fat liars, what you are. You know, we've all made a mistake and felt like quitting. All of us. We've all done the stupid thing. You ever said stuff with your mouth that you're like, well, I'm just a lost cause. Yeah, you have. You ever said stuff you don't even believe? You ever told somebody you hate them when you don't really hate them? We could do a church test and see who the liars are. Anybody want to? Yes, you have. You ever felt like the black sheep in a world full of white sheep? Like you're the mistake? You're the problem? Yeah, you have. Why? Because I don't have to be psychic, guys. This isn't a magic test. God's not having to hit some kind of divine thing on me and be like, read all of their mail. This is because you have a flesh the same way I have a flesh, and flesh is common to man, and flesh is the natural thing, and it is very easy to read. So you will feel that way, and your flesh will try to pin you down and say, quit. Dr. Barclay said, to quit is the same thing as to concede. You let the enemy win when you quit. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm too competitive to quit. Yeah. Amen. I'm too competitive to quit. I'm not letting the enemy win.
No.
He's beaten me too many days. You know, I still tell people to this day, I tell them, listen, I do good. You want to look at me and say like, oh, you churchy person, you do churchy stuff, you're just too churchy for me. I'm not that churchy. Yeah, get over yourself. You're not too anything. You got nothing. You don't even have real standards. Name a moral standard that exists without a God. Because any standard out there on the planet that exists has to exist with a God, otherwise it's subjective. Now you name a moral standard that's subjective and can still stand, because then I can tell you, well, it's okay to me if I murder somebody, but to you it's wrong that I murder somebody. Why is it wrong that I murder somebody again? Just because you think it is, but not because I think it is. Where's the moral compass? It can't be based on man's idea that it's not okay. It has to be based on something beyond man that's not changeable, that's not under review, that's not subjective for you, or it can't even exist. Morality will do what it's doing in the world, which is constantly changed based on what's acceptable in society, to the extent that it could finally get to a place where rape and murder and all this filth is acceptable in society, and then it would be legal because it is not subjected under God. It is subjective to the people. Yes, because if it's acceptable, you see it in society now. In the 50s, homosexuality was considered a disease by people, but nowadays when you talk about it, they promote it even though they don't agree with it because it's acceptable in society, so they want to stay right with society more than they want to stay right with the standards of morality, because morality has to be based under God. It can't exist without being based under God. It doesn't survive unless it's based under God. So without a God, there can't be morality. If you think society is going to do it, you have mistaken yourself. They will not. And people have said to me, what do you have against homosexuals? Nothing. I want them to get saved the same as everybody. Well, what do you have against them? What are you, homophobic? I'm far from it. I'm not in any way. I'm not phobic about hardly anything. If I see a spider, I don't go, oh. I can't find things. I'm not afraid of anything except losing my faith. I don't want to do that. But I'm not phobic against anybody, guys. I'm not afraid about anybody. I'm just concerned about what sin does when you allow it, what sin does when you condone it, what sin does when you spread it, what sin does when it starts becoming the acceptable thing, and what happens in a world where you can no longer talk about things that are true, because you're going to get accosted because no longer do you fit inside a society. Well, guys, that's been going on in the church for a long time. Yeah. You think it's new, you're crazy. Go read your Bible. It's even in here.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, it's thousands of years old.
Yeah.
I want to help teach you how to get enough of this in you, enough of God in you, that you can stay in the narrow way where you're never going to be alone, never going to be hollow, never going to be empty. And I can tell you, it starts and ends with getting a hold of Jesus Christ. If you don't have it, you're not going to have the answer. Now, I'm reading a scripture because I'm stubborn, and I can speak to that I've been stubborn. And I'm going to read the scripture, even if it doesn't fit with the message that I've been preaching. I'm reading the scripture. We might need to screw this down, I think. James 1, we're going to start in verse 2, and we'll see where I end. Somewhere in here it's going to fit in, I promise you, even though this wasn't my message. I have a message. My messages are always short, and I just let God, they're always just a verse or something, and God will do what he wants to. He certainly did this morning. He gets to do what he wants to in here. He's the boss. My brethren, count it all joy. What joy? All. Oh, all. Yep, all of it. When you fall into various trials. Have you ever fell into anything under the bed where it felt good when you landed? What happened? Oh, honey, I fell in the hallway. It feels amazing. You ought to fall in the hallway. You ever done that? You're here in the kitchen like, what happened? I fell off the counter. It's cool. It feels awesome. Have you ever heard of a fall? Like, I fell off the garage. Really woke me up. Glad that happened. Have you ever heard a fall associated with something good? Have you ever yourself said it? Unless you're a stunt guy, you've never used it in a sentence where it was a success at the end of that. I was in a race. I fell. I won. Like, no. You're in a race, you fell, a bunch of people passed you. Yeah. Like that. Have you never fallen? Fall is not, you don't associate fall with success. Like, oh, and I had a great fall. Yeah, there you go, exactly. There was a guy when I was young, and I was in church, and I was like Johnny's age, younger than Johnny, actually, by about 5 years. And this was one of my best friends at the time. His dad went climbing up cliffs and stuff, going whatever. I was never interested in doing that. As a guy, I always liked to climb things as a kid, as a boy. We always thought it wouldn't, you know, the girls would look at us. I remember doing that as a guy. You'd climb up on top of stuff and be like, ha! Like the girls are going to look at you and be like, wow, you climbed. Like they can't climb. But we do it anyway. And half the time, I just think the girls are like, and we're stupid enough to marry those. Like, they climbed up there for no reason. Now how are they going to get down? You ever climbed up something so high that you didn't know how you're going to get down? I've done that. That's when you decide, I'm just going to enjoy the view. I went so high up this tree, I'm moving. I'm just going to enjoy the view. Just going to enjoy the view. Well, this guy climbed this cliff, and about 40 feet up, he lost grip, this wasn't modern day, guys. He didn't have stuff. He was a genius. He decided to just climb the cliff, and he fell 40 feet, landed on his back. We got the word that happened, and not one of us was like, I bet that cured his leg problems he's been having. I bet it fixed that big toe infection he's been battling. No, we all thought he was dead. Now, he somehow, supernaturally, by the power of God, got healed, and he had a broken back and all kinds of broken stuff, but he got healed, restored. He was back up and running within a matter of, you know, just a couple months. But nobody thought of that fall as a great... It only matters because it's right here. It says, when you fall is not good, into various trials. Consider it, count it, think of it like it's a joy. When you fall into various trials, knowing, if that word wasn't there in verse 3, you would have a really downside of this, like, we're crazy people. We're not crazy. It's like the Bible says about Jesus. If you look at the joy set before you, you can endure things you never could endure. You could endure a cross if you look at what's in front of you and find a joy up there. If all you do is look at what you're dealing with right now, your life may stink and you may stink and you may need a shower. But you, if you look at your own self right now, might be hopeless. But yourself in the future is not.
Yeah, amen.
You know, back all those years ago when I first started in ministry, I wouldn't think what God was going to do and use me to build up an army in Florida. Not an army, but a God's army.
Yeah.
That's what God's having me do. He's having me raise an army out of this place in Florida where we're going to go out and touch and reach this world. I wouldn't think that's what God was going to do back then when I started. I wasn't thinking, oh, you're going to move me to Florida. I had that connection with the military from way back then. We have military people in this church.
Yep.
You think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. I think it's one of the things that God put in me way back then that I didn't know what he was going to do. I have an automatic love for military built into me. Because of the way I grew up and because of what I went through, even when I first got turned around, trying to get all those church kids to go through, you know, a core, ROTC. Because
yeah.
I thought, you guys are a bunch of undisciplined little brats, and you need to get a wake-up call, and this will do it. Any parent who tells their kid, like, go into the military, it's going to be good for you, what they really mean is, they're going to spank you with a whooping I can't spank you with, and you're going to hate them, but you won't hate me. Like, so you still love me when you're, anybody who's been in the military knows. Anybody in the military ever tell you, drop and give me 20 when you feel like it, if it's good for you, are you sore? Maybe nowadays in the military, if you give them the right color card. I know there are certain things, but no. Anyway. I'm just telling you, it's really funny. If you get like a couple generations back military with the current military people, the kind of conversations and arguments are really hilarious. Anyway, let's get past it. Knowing that the testing, knowing, this is the reason, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Oh, yeah. Everybody loves patience. You ever said that to your spouse? Just be patient with me. You know what that means? It's about to stink for you for a long period of time. You know how many times I've had marriage counseling where the answer is you have to be patient and wait on God, but when you tell the other person that they're going to have to wait for that other person to change, the look on their face is that look of like, oh, no. Like, I've already been holding my breath, so don't you see I'm dying? Like, you just told me to keep waiting. Yeah, but you're supposed to, this is a reward.
Come on.
You're looking at it as though it's a punishment. It's a reward.
Come on.
The testing of your faith, if your faith will succeed, produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be, what's that weird word, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Well, you look at that, it does fit into what I was preaching, and I didn't even mean it to. This wasn't what I was going to preach on. This is the problem, guys. You go through a hard time. Anybody been through one? Yes, we already covered this. You go through a hard time, and instead of it producing the patience and the faith and you considering it joy, you get hollow, not full and complete. You get hollow and empty. You let your flesh take its response, and you act in that. Have you ever had a good fleshly response to somebody that comes and tries to hurt your life? No, you haven't. Yeah, that's exactly what it feels like. we've talked about this, but you ever had a relationship conversation where in the relationship, the other person says something, and your response to them was like, blah, 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 blah. And as soon as you said it, you're like, oh, that was bad. That was so stupid. Like, this is going to hurt. What happens next? And then they say something that's so hurtful that you're like, you just ended everything. Listen to what's coming your way now. And you lay it down. So terrible. So fleshly. But when you go, you don't feel like a victor or a winner. You feel like you got the beating of a lifetime and you lost. Because you can't have a flesh response to a trial or a testing and have a great godly outcome.
Right.
You're going to have a faith response if you want a good godly outcome.
Right.
If you do the flesh version, instead of the narrow way, you hit a tree. And your whole life stops and you feel convinced you're stopped. You can't move. You're paralyzed. Probably how my father felt when he rolled off that four-wheeler. But what you don't feel like is complete, lacking in nothing, or perfect. You feel the opposite. You feel all of your mistakes and all of your flaws and all of your problems, and you notice them all of a sudden. Don't you?
Yeah.
You think about all the things that are imperfect in you and you try to work on them. You feel empty inside and lonely even though you're not. You convince yourself you are. Nobody loves me. They don't remember how we talked about like the parents and their favorite? We'll get that feeling about everything. Like, I'm nobody's favorite.
Come on.
Why? Because we try to face an actual disaster, an actual trial, an actual battle in our natural flesh self with a natural flesh reaction, and we just get off the narrow way for just a second, and a tree smacks us, and all of a sudden, a few pieces of silver later, we're selling Jesus out, and we wonder why we feel so hollow, so alone, so empty that we go die out by a tree somewhere, and the rest of the Christians are trying to do something about life still. They still lost Jesus,
come on.
But they didn't quit. If you don't have a faith response when a trial comes, you are not going to feel complete. You are not going to feel perfect. You are not going to feel like you have been filled up. You're going to feel like you've been emptied out. And I'm telling you the truth this morning. This is right now. This is the difference for your life. You are going to, we all fight a battle. When you go home today, you will still fight emotional, mental, or whatever your battle is. And if you can't get a hold of the fact that those battles are meant to produce something inside of you by faith. Without faith, it will not produce patience. Without faith, it will produce an anxiety. It will produce an anger. It will produce a tree right there for your face. And then it will produce the feeling of lay still, do nothing. Your life has ended. You're hopeless. Nobody cares. You'll be like the Samaritan on the side of the road, not like the person helping the Samaritan. We want to be the people helping the people that are lost, not the people that are lost in the trees going, God, I don't know the way out. We're supposed to know where the path is. We're supposed to have answers. And even those people, sometimes when they have an answer, they bother you.
Come on.
You sit there upset that somebody else acts like they know what's going on. They try to tell you something godly, and you sit there going, well, don't give the Bible to me. Don't preach at me. I always tell people, I preach at everything. I'll preach at my plants if they start dying. I'm going to preach at everything. So just shut up. If you don't want me to preach at you, start walking and I'm going to follow.
Come on.
You're going to hear me preach till you get into something I can't get in and go somewhere I won't go. I'll preach into a bar. You want to walk into a bar, I'm going to preach at you all the way into the bar and I'll sit next to you preaching. And everybody else is going to really hate you because you brought me. I don't stop preaching. Well, don't act like that. God always has the answer.
Yeah. Yes.
If you've lost faith, you better get some faith back. If you've lost faith, then your battle is guaranteed to sink you instead of help you. Here it tells me, and I'm going to read it one more time. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, and let patience have its perfect work. This is what patience will do in you. If you could see what you're going to be in the next 5 years, you would be more patient because you'd be excited what God is going to do with you. But when you look at where you're at in your own mess and your own garbage, you will get destroyed because you don't have the knowledge of what God's going to do. Let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith. You hear this point about faith, guys. If you've lost faith, you're going to miss it. Let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave by the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. You heard me mention this about like tumbleweeds. We're not supposed to be like that. Wave tossed by the wind. For let that man not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. And when your life feels unstable and when you feel like your world is shaking, it is normally because your flesh, that other mind, that other double presence, that other thing that you don't have to agree with in your spirit or you don't have to like, that thing that you said or the thing that you've done that you don't even agree with in who you are, but you sure did it. That other mind is taking control of something and it's gotten its way, and that double-mindedness has led you down a path that it should not, and you are somebody that is unstable. Have you ever met somebody that's unstable? We had this, I'm going to close with this because of the time, but also because I'm closing. I don't really care about the time if I'm honest. We had this girl, this is back when we were in the world, me and Casey were hanging out, and this girl came over to his house where we would always, you know, drink and drugs and whatever. At his house, and this girl came over, and she was sitting there, and it was, both of us were sitting around the table, and we had, you know, a couple girls, a couple of us guys sitting around the table. We'd play poker, play whatever we wanted to. It was stupid, worldly garbage. And this girl was there in there, and we were sitting over at the bar that was in his basement, and so we had the table, and we were sitting there, and she looked in the mirror, and she started talking to the person in the mirror. And so I was sitting next to her like, this girl's unstable in all her ways. I didn't know the phrase, but I knew. Then she starts just staring off into nowhere. And I was like, ooh, I'm not sitting by this girl. So when we went and sat down at that round table I told you about, I sat opposite of that girl. And Casey, who thought the girl was attractive, was like right next to, like it was a round table, and his seat was like right next to hers. That's how you do if you're a guy and you're attracted to the girl. You find like everybody else is spaced out evenly and your seat's like, oh, mine's next to yours. I guess this is what I'm going to have to do. That's what you do. So he did that. This girl, I was sitting there and I'm sitting there on the other side. And now I grew up Christian enough. So this is what I did. I was whispering, cover my mouth like this. I was whispering and I'd say, Jesus, just under my breath. And every time I'd say it, she would do this and freak out. She couldn't hear me. She'd freak out and shake it and this and look right at me, and then she'd look back at the table. And I was like, whoo, this girl is unstable. And then Casey, I had him go over there and I said, hey, Case, remember the thing I told you about? I was telling him about a demoniac. I said, check this out. And so I did this and I said, Jesus. And she did the thing and he was like, how do I get out of my house? I was like, none of my business. I'm out of here. This ain't my house. I didn't bring her into this house. Like, this is your problem, Jack. I just told you what happened. But he immediately found out, like, it wasn't a little thing to him. Like, now he's over next to me. Like, his tear moved around the thing. He's next to me like, what do we do with this thing now? This is an unstable in all their ways person right over there. This is fully unstable. And it became a race to how fast can we find that? It's about time to turn it. Like, it's 7 o'clock at night. You're just like, got to get an early one today. Like, it was amazing how he yeah, it's so nice to, and then if we could just like, oh my gosh, what do we have to clean? What do we do? That freaked him out. Like, no, if you mention it to him to this day, he'll be like, that was an unstable. You do not want to be like that, guys. You do not want to be like that. You want God to have a way in your life. You want to actually be complete, not empty. And he's the only one that'll complete you. If you think that some lady out there is going to complete you, you have watched too much Hallmark, seen too many romantic movies. If you're a lady and you're like, I'm just hoping for the guy that'll complete you, I don't care how good the phrase sounds, like, you complete me. No. God will complete you.
Yes.
That other person can add things to you you've
yes.
always needed, whether you like them or not, but that's not going to complete you. God will have to be the one to complete you. It will fill some things in your life and make you feel happy, but only if it's godly, because if you don't find a godly woman, it will make you feel another thing.